Hi again and welcome to In the Studio, now in our 22nd consecutive year. I'm Red Beard, with stories behind history's greatest rock and roll albums. Today in the studio, we mark the anniversary of Warren Zevon's breakthrough album, Excitable Boy, while bidding farewell to a life carried away on the wind. Through the news media, you probably know more about how Warren Zevon died on September 7, 2003, than about how he lived, wrote, and created. Zevon was a prolific songwriter, recording no less than 14 albums in his 56 years, not counting best-of compilations either. It was his third effort, 1978's Excitable Boy album, that took the quirky songwriter onto the radio and into the charts. Warren had already furnished the songs Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me, Carmelita, and Hasten Down the Wind for singer Linda Ronstadt at the height of her career. With the album Excitable Boy, writer Stephen Stolder says, Warren Zevon stepped forward as something of the Dark Prince of California, like Jack the Ripper in a convertible. Excitable Boy, Stolder cautions, is the one that put Zevon in the public consciousness as someone to keep an eye on, for protection as well as promise, end quote. Warren was born to Russian immigrant parents in Chicago, grew up in Southern California and Arizona. Warren's father was a professional gambler. Warren Zevon's early musical tastes weren't like most American kids.
I remember that there were 78s of classical music. I think my mother listened to big band music, to stuff from the 40s, but I remember there was a little of the most popular classical records that you find in any home, you know, Beethoven's Sixth Symphony, as a matter of fact, and 78s, those big folios of lots of 78 records. Pop music didn't really get me going. It wasn't a terribly exciting era. I came in just a little after the exciting era of rock and roll, the Everly Brothers and Elvis. Popular music wasn't too interesting, and it certainly didn't interest me at all. The social circumstances surrounding one's first hearing of pop music were interesting, to say the least, you know. Junior high school kissing parties were interesting, and, you know, whatever was playing in the background.
Even though the title song to Warren Zevon's 1978 album Excitable Boy is about a guy who did some dastardly things to his girlfriend, Warren told me that the song had a far more innocent beginning. Now, it all started one night at the home of his friend, Leroy Marinell.
We were kind of poor at the time and glad for the fact that Roy was a great cook and a good host and made pot roast that night. And after dinner, I was talking to Roy about my guitar playing. And I asked him why people didn't let me play lead guitar. And he said, well, you know, you get good ideas, Warren, but then you get too excited. And I said, I'm just an excitable boy. And we immediately wrote the song. And I saw Roy when I was playing in Chicago, where he lives. And he came up after the show and said, not bad, not bad. You laid back a little more tonight.
It was many years before Warren and Roy wrote that song together that Zevon began his musical career. He was fortunate to have parents who enjoyed music, and as a result, there was always a piano around the Zevon household. But as Warren told me, his first love has always been his other instrument.
I probably started pounding on the piano from the time I could reach it. I preferred then and prefer now to play guitar, really, because it's, for me, playing guitar, I could say it was more expressive, but that's really just dignifying it. It's more indulgent. And I associate playing the piano with good technique, things like that. Gainful employment when I was young, less exciting and satisfying than trying to be Jimi Hendrix.
Warren Zevon wrote a bizarre tongue-in-cheek fairy tale about radical revolutionaries with Tommy guns called Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner from 1978's Excitable Boy album, alluding to such real-life hotspots as Biafra, South Africa, Northern Ireland, and the Middle East. That song is a perfect example of how Warren Zevon wove truth with nonsense. Leaving home in his mid-teens, Warren Zevon took off for New York in a Corvette that his father had won in a card game. Bound for Greenwich Village, Warren was determined to find fame and fortune as a folk singer. It didn't take long, however, before Zevon was headed back to the West Coast. Arriving in San Francisco, he quickly hooked up with a woman named Violet Santangelo,
to form a duo known as Lime and Seibel through Violet's connections. Lime and Seibel got their first record deal.
She knew somebody who knew somebody who worked at White Whale Records. Ted Fagan and Lila Seth, I haven't seen them in many years. And they signed us. And they had the Turtles in. We all became friends, and I wrote a couple of songs, one with my old Bill Evans kind of jazz-aspiring roommate, Glenn Crocker. He and I wrote one song, and I wrote another song the Turtles did, which paid the rent for a while. One was called Like the Seasons, and it was on the B-side of Happy Together. And one was called Outside Chance. We did a couple of records. The most interesting thing about which, I guess, is the fact that Bones Howe produced them. Bones was and is a great musician and producer. And an arranger named Bob Thompson, who's still very much around. You know, we're not talking about the Civil War. Arranged them. Well, primarily, I think, you know, I mean, it's safer to assume that I write fiction. You know, I mean, I'm not a novelist, but I'm essentially writing fiction. My job is making things up, you know. But Lawyers, Guns, and Money was very loosely in my mind based on the idea of the old Chuck Berry song, Dear Dad. Dear Dad, don't get mad what I'm asking for. And I was on a vacation with a guy named Bert Stein, who worked at Asylum Records, and a great guy. Bert and I were riding along, riding through a sugarcane field in Kauai with this gal who was a waitress at the place we were staying in. She was taking us to somebody's house. And we were, you know, sunny day, beautiful day, riding through the cane fields. And she says, well, there's nobody really home at this place we're going. We said, yeah, what do you mean exactly? And she says, well, we'll just let ourselves in. We're saying, yeah. And she says, yeah, well, they won't mind. We might have to kind of break in. And I looked around at Bert and said, Dear Joe, thinking of Joe Smith, who was the head of Asylum Records, and our boss, I guess you might say. And I said, Dear Joe, send lawyers. Or I said, Dear Joe, and Bert said, send lawyers. And I said, and guns. He said, and money.
Before Warren Zevon even recorded his Excitable Boy album, he spent many years doing odd musical jobs, including writing and producing wine commercials.
I did a session, I figured, for once for every arranger in town, because I had a Rickenbacker 12-string like Roger, then Jim McGuinn's, and people would say, get that kid with a Rickenbacker, and I'd come to the session, I'd be sitting next to Glenn Campbell or someone like that, and it took one session for them to realize that I didn't know how to play it, but I still did a lot, played on a lot of jingles, played a lot of Show Up With Your Guitar and try to look professional at 19 or whatever I was. And through Bob Thompson, that arranger, I wrote a few commercials because I believe they came to him and wanted a folk song type of commercial for Gallo Wine, and he said, why don't you get this guy? He is a folk singer.
After kicking around the LA studios during the late 60s, Warren Zevon finally got around to recording his first album in 1970. It was called Wanted Dead or Alive, and as Warren Zevon himself later admitted, it deservedly fell on deaf ears.
Yeah, I was signed to Bones Howe. I don't know, I think Bones liked me, and he gave me a stack of contracts. I think he may have hoped that I was going to turn out to be Jim Webb 2, the sequel. You know, Jim wrote those amazing Fifth Dimension songs and Songs for Everybody, and Bones had worked with him and produced them, and it didn't work out that way. It would have been nice if it had. I've always loved Jim Webb. He was one of the biggest influences on my songwriting all along. Jim Webb and Burt Bacharach were as big an influence in their ways. Bob Dylan and Anton von Webern were in theirs. One of my first friends in Hollywood was a guy named David Marks, who was one of the original Beach Boys, a real fine guitarist. And David knew Phil Everly, and I guess they were looking to do something a little different, get a piano player. So I got the job of them, and I got him Waddy Wachtel, which is a great thing to do for anybody, you know, which was my great achievement as a musical director. Getting a hold of Waddy. You know, I can't remember exactly where I knew Waddy from. I think he was kind of new in town then. We were young fellas then, you know. We hadn't knocked around too long enough to wear down the edges. I guess I met a lot of people through Waddy. You know, it's hard to remember exactly where everybody came from. I met Leroy Marinell. Met my ex-wife, Crystal. I met Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks through her, I guess. And Lindsay and I played in a band behind Don Everly, too, for a while.
But finally, in 1976, Warren Zevon got his first big break. Jackson Browne, whom Warren had befriended years earlier when they were both struggling musicians in L.A., Jackson helped him get a contract with Asylum Records, the huge label at the time. Not only did Jackson record for them, so did Linda Ronstadt and the Eagles, among others.
The Everlys broke up, and I did a few things, and I was kind of looking to get a record deal, but I was, more important than that, I didn't want to be another guy hanging around Hollywood, becoming embittered and, you know, losing my joie de vivre outside the doors of record companies. So Crystal and I just packed up and went off to Spain with the sort of loose idea that Phil Everly was working on a solo album in England, and that maybe we'd hook up with him and I would arrange it, which is what ended up happening. And in the meantime, I also noticed that one or two people had begun to do Werewolves of London, which had been written. All those songs had been written. And we got a postcard in Spain from Jackson saying he thought it was time that I made the record. I think that I was also very keen on doing it for David Geffen's label, which really kind of stood for something in the early 70s. And I guess I got in touch with Jackson and said, I guess I'm ready to make it if you're going to produce it. I guess I had worked on one solo album of Phil Everly's, and I remember him saying to me, I'm doing another solo album, so why don't you guys write a song for me? Why don't you guys write a dance song for me, like Werewolves of London? Now, I don't know, maybe some people might have said, what do you mean, Phil? But I guess I just nodded and said, sure, and I was over it. At Roy Marinell's house in Venice, California, and we were sitting around one afternoon, and Waddy walked in. Roy was playing the Such As It Is, the entire musical arrangement of the song on the guitar, and Waddy walked in and said, what are you guys doing? And we said, we're doing the Werewolves of London.
Warren Zevon co-wrote the song Tenderness on the Block along with Jackson Browne, a good friend at the time, on the Excitable Boy album. Up next, we'll hear the story behind Warren Zevon's final release called The Wind. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for Warren Zevon's Excitable Boy.
Welcome back to In the Studio. This is Warren Zevon with Redbeard.
That, of course, was recorded a few years ago before the death of Warren Zevon at age 56 on September 7, 2003. It may be a coincidence that Warren Zevon died on the 25th anniversary of his breakthrough album, 1978's Excitable Boy, but there's no surprise that his final album, The Wind, made urgently while he was dying of inoperable lung cancer. It debuted its first week at number 16, by far his strongest start in 15 previous efforts. If he'd realized what an effective marketing move a predictable death can be, knowing Zevon's penchant for gallows humor, he'd probably have died much earlier in his career, and more frequently. Here's Warren Zevon.
I never thought of myself as being like or unlike anybody else that was working in L.A., you know. To paraphrase John Lennon, you know, I don't believe in L.A., and I never did believe in L.A. sound. I mean, I try to explain to people there were a lot of studios there, and I lived there, and there were guys from Texas who lived there, and a guy from Detroit, and a guy who was born there, and all different kinds of people who all worked there, you know, and all tended to work with the musicians in town who were best, who one got to know, whose friends knew, and then you got to know, and you worked with, and you thought you'd work with again because you were happy with the results. And it's not, I wouldn't call it a geographic coincidence, because it is where a lot of records get made. But, you know, my point being that if you're in New York, you make New York records and people think you're a New Yorker and ask you why there's a New York sound and you only use those people. People thought my songs weren't so great, and in fact they weren't, but I didn't want to hear it, of course. I don't know, I think I started out writing a lot of songs that weren't so great. You know, some people think I'm lazy, and I think that I write what I can. And if I don't like it, and I don't think you'll like it, then I, you know... then I erase it. That's all there really is to say about that. I'd like to be more prolific, and I'd like to write better songs, but, you know, you get what you get, and if you don't think it's good enough, you don't pass it along. I mean, I may be wrong about that. People suggest that maybe I am, but I don't pass them along. I can't say that I really put my own records on and kind of wallow in nostalgia or admiration, you know. It's my work. My job is the next album. Other people's albums affect me that way. You know, other music affects me that way. It reminds me of a time and a place and a person and things about my life. Extra musical things. Those kind of associations. But, you know, it's like a job. I built those shelves, and I built that house, and I don't have to go live in it. I better start another one, you know, or I won't be paying the rent anywhere.
Recording the album The Wind while playing Beat the Clock should have imparted an urgency, maybe even a desperation, to these songs. But I hear only honesty from Warren Zevon.
The impact of that album on my career is that there is now, are now one or two or three songs that people, that mean something to people in terms of their lives, which is, I think that's what hit records do. Otherwise, I think that people would think of me as an interesting songwriter. And one person would have a favorite song and someone else would have a favorite song. But I think in this case, there are a fair amount of people who all have the same favorite song. And I think that the phenomenon of hits is a little different than finding a song interesting. You know, I think that past a certain point, a song starts to have something to do with your life. You know, you remember that girl, you remember that place, you remember that party, you remember that final exam you flunked or passed, and you remember things that make the song kind of some kind of mnemonic deal for you, for your life.
Warren Zevon even looked death straight in the eye by performing the song Knockin' on Heaven's Door on The Wind. The paradox of The Wind, of course, is that we feel its unseen hand throughout our lives, yet we can never touch it. The wind only touches us. Warren Zevon has gone ahead on his journey to find the source of the eternal wind. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking Warren Zevon for giving us the story of Excitable Boy. God bless Warren's soul. You can visit inthestudio.net for this and your other favorite interviews. In the Studio was written this edition by Joe Rhodes and by Redbeard. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunette. Theme song by Andy Timmons. In the Studio is now in its 22nd consecutive year. Produced by Barbarossa Limited. Copyright 2009. All rights reserved. Be a part of the In the Studio network at inthestudio.net. In the Studio is distributed by Radio K&G.